Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey. This is Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, only today there's no Mark Clifton. And I'm Dan Hurst. And the reason there's no Mark Clifton is when we get together and do these podcasts, we try to do them with an economy of time. And so we will do several podcasts all at the same time. But we all have full-time jobs and we all have responsibilities. And this is one of those times where Mark had a conflict and he had some other things that he had to do, some meetings and everything that he was dealing with. So he said, well, let's just do this because we have a special guest today in Jim Eliff. And so we thought, we don't want to let Jim Eliff get away. And so we're going to talk to him and find out a little bit about his ministry. Jim is the founder of Christian Communicators Worldwide, which is a wonderful organization that does teaching and seminars for pastors and church leaders, provides material. The material is available usually just for shipping costs. But you can actually download a lot of the material from the website in PDFs. And we'll put that in the show notes. But the name or the website is ccwtoday.org. And we highly recommend that. He's written a book that is going to be coming out here pretty soon that we talked about in the last program about the Lord's Supper is a meal. Great little insightful book about what the Lord's Supper is and some considerations of actually celebrating the Lord's Supper based on biblical principles.
It's out there now, by the way.
So. It is out there already?
Right.
Okay, good. All right. So, Jim, welcome to the podcast. And Jim is also, 20-some-odd years ago, really got into developing what we call, normally call, house churches. Mm-hmm. And there is a network now called Christ Fellowship, of Kansas City, which is a network of how many different homes now?
Right now we have five, so they're packed out, right?
And it's an interesting. If you've gone to seminary, you know, I remember going to seminary, some people do house churches because they can't do church, you know, right. and that was the attitude, you know, it was kind of looked down upon, like it's less than a church. And quite the opposite is true.
Quite the opposite.
Let's talk a little bit about that. And first of all, what is a house church?
Thank you, Dan. A house church is just a church that meets in a home. So we have legitimate pastoral leadership, and the pastors of these, the elders or pastors, same person, of these house churches form the team of elders. So we meet together every week at 5:30 in the morning, by the way, which is pretty rough.
Yeah,
it takes a man
rough
to be a house church pastor because they have jobs. You know, they have other jobs. And there's no head pastor. So, it's a group of believers that meet at home. We have believers meetings. That's our intent is to strengthen the believer. We do a lot of evangelism, but we do it outside. Mm-hmm. And so it's a believers meeting. We're together 4 or 5 hours on Sunday afternoons. And a critical characteristic of that is the open sharing that takes place, really serious Bible teaching, but interactive, and the eating of a meal called the Lord's Supper, and then just being together. So we spend a good while together.
What happens with the children?
Well, we drug them up, and, you know, we can generally put them in a room, lock the door.
Yeah,
that's
one option.
That's generally what we do. Yeah, no, every group has a little different configuration. So each congregation, we call them congregations, house congregations, each one can do as it sees fit at that stage in its development. So if they happen to have a lot of children, the one I had in Liberty, had quite a few children, so they had to learn, and we helped the parents learn how to do that at home and teach them to really listen well, and they participate with us in the meetings. Sometimes they're directly, we had one man, for instance, who would often directly take a Bible story and teach for the whole group, but with the children in mind, really interacting
with
them.
So you don't necessarily separate them, then?
No, but it's the prerogative of, if they happen to have very young children that are particularly disruptive at that stage, which mm-hmm. happens in the beginning, they can do that. They can have a nursery if they want to for part of the time. Maybe there's a more serious teaching time, lengthier teaching time, interactive teaching time, and that might be a good time to pull away and be a little quieter in the room. So they can do that if they want to. A congregation would just do it by the stage they're in and how they're developing.
So once
they have freedom to do that.
So once the children are like youth, at youth age,
well, even
they're just
children.
Involved completely with the whole
absolutely.
With the adults and all.
They're participating, actually sharing in the meetings.
Yes.
And, yeah. So even the kids are normally speaking up. I mean, in the meeting, it's not unusual to have some really interesting things from kids.
Oh, that
and
is
we
interesting.
Really,
yeah.
Yeah. We like that, encourage that. And we love for them to see their parents speaking out about the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a good thing, I think, for
what children. Happens to the congregation during the week? Because you only meet once a week, correct? Other than the meeting.
We meet in the house church once a week unless we want to do something else, and that can happen. So then midweek, we have a commitment to mentor every man. So our pastors meet with the men of their congregation. So
as a group or one-on-one?
As a group, it'd be like, let's say, six guys or seven guys. Maybe at Panera, I know one congregation does that typically at Panera. Then others do it in a home. And they'll just meet together early in the morning before they go to work and have some Bible study, but with a serious intent to really get into the lives of each other and apply these things, just to these men. That's really critical because we're very interested in male leadership and development. So almost all of our activities have a lot of interaction where we can see who's leading, see who's having an effect, see who's developing and growing, and they're learning things. And then we also have midweek, we'll meet like the ladies for 4 weeks and the men will stay home with the kids so we don't have a nursery issue, and then we'll swap it around. And the youth, girls or boys, let's say the girl youth young ladies, the teenagers, they'll meet with the ladies when they meet, but they'll meet separately when the men are meeting. So being mentored by another lady. So in another part of the house, in the basement or in another room. Mm-hmm. And so this is a great way for us to be together. Then every 6 weeks we all come together and we rent a fireplace room in a retreat center, and we have a more traditional looking, little retreatish, but more traditional looking teaching type situation where we just are, we have a stand and teaching, and the instrumentalists from all the group are there. We have a lot of guitarists and cello and violin and so forth. They're all there. And, we sing together, have a great time, eat together there as well. So
when the church meets,
whose
home do they meet in?
Usually, Dan, we have usually two, at least a couple, maybe three, if we're blessed, homes that are adequate to meet in a congregation. We typically would stay a few weeks in one home and then shift to another home. Just that seems to work
better. So you do move around.
But we can move around if we have the housing to do it. And that's worked real well now for 22 years. We're careful with neighbors. We watch the situation. People now buying homes, after 22 years, you find people buying their next home. And they're just looking for homes that meets enough people, has good parking. And, that's a pretty typical thing. They're all saying, well, I think our house is going to work, so that's not unusual at all for us to actually aim toward that. People are actually enjoy having people in their home.
One of the things that we have to deal with in the kind of church that where you meet in a building, the normative church that we're used to, is the attrition How does that happen in a house church? Obviously, there's more accountability because it's a smaller group. But do you find yourselves having to deal with some attrition there?
Well, I mean, people move out of town and things like that. I mean, it does. Yeah. It can happen. Obviously, it can happen. I have experienced, I think, less of this in this church. We've experienced less of this than that is typical. We don't have anything like people on the roll who don't come. We don't have it's been 100% active attendance from the beginning.
Really?
So absolutely. So we don't have that. I mean, it's like it's not that we have to push it. It's just that this is a family. This is a family reunion in a sense, right? And we're together, and it just is inconceivable just to miss, you know, just to not be there. I mean, if they're sick or if they're out of town or something. Of course, they just let us know. We know where everybody is, and again, it's not an ugly, forced thing, legalistic feeling thing at all. They just, I mean, there's not much not to like about being together. We just really enjoy being together. It's relaxed, really strengthening to the soul. We're eating a meal together. It's a great setting, and together, usually 4 or 5 hours.
Do you find that there is the demographics of a house church are different from the demographics of the other kind of church?
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. I think we have the spread of ages. You know, we have quite a few young people. We have newlyweds. You know, we have some older people. Not necessarily. The churches I've been in have all had a lot of younger people, so I don't know. It's hard for me to even measure. And I've had now into 6 decades of ministry, so I've seen a lot in churches. But I think people forget that people in the generation that I was born into were pretty innovative. You know, we were thinking about ways to relate to back then, and ways to be more intimate and so forth, and they're not necessarily opposed to that idea even. And the young people, of course, are all in. So I don't think necessarily that's the case. Is there any difference demographically?
What would you say is the biggest problem that you have to deal with as a house church?
Two things that are probably the most challenging to us, and I just put it as a challenge because it's also a blessing.
Yeah.
How do we handle children at various stages? And then continuing to develop leaders, you know, for the future. So those are two things that are important to think about as a challenge as you get into this. So it's a leadership intensive situation. But it's not leadership intensive like you have to have a whole bunch of Sunday school teachers or other filling all kinds of committee positions and all. It's a very simple structure, very simply done. You know, all of that kind of stuff we don't really have to deal with very much at all. But it's intensive as far as pastoral leadership and that sort of thing.
Do you have, for lack of a better term, subgroups that have administrative responsibilities or things that they have to pay attention to?
I think we could, but we don't have. In other words, I think house church group of house churches could take on certain projects. Take the early church taking on the feeding scheme of feeding widows. Then you would need some organization around that. We don't have much of that at all. We support the idea of orphans and, you know, and that sort of thing. So there's a group of people that are have a high interest in that and kind of manage all of that. We, of course, have a man who's a CPA, and he takes care of our major bookkeeping responsibilities. Each individual congregation has their people who collect and post finances, you know, of course, in an appropriate way.
How are the finances used?
Yeah, well, we're a very generous church. Everybody participates in their giving. So uh, we part of the money is kept in the congregation to be spent however they wish. For instance, you might order chairs, folding chairs, or you know, just any, you might have a retreat. You might, you know, you can use that money however you wish. Then there's some of the money that's sent into the ministry central, and that money is used for some of our some of our other general expenses, insurance coverage, and the bigger annual retreats we have, and renting a space if we need it for something that we're going to do together. Renting our, for instance, our every 6 weeks meeting at the retreat center, that would come out of the central fund. Also, the people contribute to their pastors. They contribute in general to the pastors, to elders, and that money is equally divided between them every month. But it's not, they don't live on that. That's a matter of esteem to their pastor and help to them, mm-hmm. and may allow some pastors to get a different kind of job, or, you know, it provides sometimes some flexibility and help, but they're honoring to their pastors. So all the pastors have an income source on the outside.
Would,
we think that's pretty typical of the early church, actually.
Yes, yeah, it is. And would you,
a lot of people would think that.
Do you think house churches in general have a missions strategy?
Oh, we do. I mean, we're quite active, you know, in terms of missions. We have, right now, we have three on the field.
Three missionaries?
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or helpers, missionaries and missionary helpers. So we distinguish between the two, you know, and that's an important distinction to us. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we do in different parts of the world, and we give, you know, we don't have to spend money on buildings, so we'll have maybe something like 35% of our money could go into missions.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's typical.
Yeah, think about that, those of you who are listening. If you had a 35% donation to missions, you know, boy, that would be amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And so the each individual congregation in our setup chooses who it will send its money to, but we're behind the people that come up out of our congregation. So those are mainly the ones that we support. And whatever percentage they want to do it as a congregation, because we know some people have large families and some people are single. You know, they're just different. Some people live in a part of the world that costs more money. And so they kind of make an estimate of that, knowing the missionaries well, you know, so they'll just assign certain funds. We do that. Actually, the monies are sent to the missionaries through an organization that helps us account for everything well, just a clearinghouse situation. You know, that's only done really twice a year. And we let the missionaries, just work with that money over mm-hmm. the next 6 months. The reason we do that is because the configuration of a house church might change the amounts of money. We don't need to promise a certain amount of money.
Right.
You know.
What? How does a house church handle disciplinary issues?
We've had several cases of discipline in our life as a church over 22 years. I think we've had about 6 cases of serious discipline that have shown up, and we have carried it out, I think, really carefully. We've been really pleased that even when family members were involved, we've been able to retain the families. These have been cases that are some of the hardest I've had to deal with in my life. So I think the Lord has let us experience some of those difficulties to help other churches, because we're often talking to other churches and sharing our experiences with them. So many things apply in our church that to every church, right? And so so we've been serious about churches. We've written, the elders have put together something you can find on the website for free. I mean, you can find it, yeah, in a PDF of this in the website. Is our disciplinary statement, and it's very detailed and helpful. It's really been used by a lot of churches, actually. Restoring those who fall is what it's called. So we do practice church discipline. We're really serious about it, and we've had to do it, and we've had a lot of experience there. But the elders are deeply involved, of course. You know, on certain levels of discipline. It just depends. You know, there we say there are five different levels of discipline. That'd be another broadcast that we could have to talk about church discipline, but in more detail. But yeah, that little booklet spells that out, or that PDF spells that out.
What's it called again?
Restoring Those Who Fall. Okay. And again, a lot of churches have used that. We're thankful that they have.
Sure.
I think it's helpful.
And that information, of course, will be in the notes
Just look
podcast.
Under books on the website. Right.
Do people join a house church?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. We think membership is important. We think it was part of the early church. It's just crazy. The difference is, I mean, if a person became, in the early church where you have a brand new situation, if somebody becomes a Christian, they're automatically, they're baptized, they're mm-hmm. automatically part of the church, right? But to get to that same place, with so many churches around, obviously membership is needed. So that was membership then. It was just more automatic. They know who they can discipline and who they can't. They knew that. We thought about things like that, but in the beginning, but just immediately felt that was not wise, especially because of the disciplinary issues. Because the church needs to be involved in a certain stage of some kinds of discipline. So, it's especially removal, expulsion of people. Mm-hmm. So when I say, I made a mistake in what I said. Really, many discipline situations have come up, much more than six, but expulsion happened in six places, times.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah.
And just one more question as we begin to wrap things up here. The pastors of house churches, are there educational requirements for that?
No, some of them are seminary trained. Others are just good Bible teachers, people who've learned the Bible. I'm thinking of one of the pastors who's a good case. He came in as a single man. He began to study the Bible like we study the Bible. He ended up, I don't know, I think he said he studied about 15 books of the Bible in the process we had. And so he became really familiar with the Word of God. He got married. He has now seven kids, and he's one of our pastors.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Well, he's got his own church.
Yeah, he's building his own church. Yeah, he is. So, I'll tell you this, Dan. I don't know if we want to talk more about this, but what it was concerning to me was intimacy seemed often missing in churches. Participatory life. The Bible describes the meetings of the church as participatory and the life of the church as participatory. And intimacy in relationships, true fellowship. So we found in the model that the Lord began, not that we think it is prescriptive. We don't have to do that. We could have a building, and a house is a building, right? But we found that we have those things more spontaneously. It's more part of the inertia of the church. It's harder in some situations to get to true fellowship and true intimacy and true participation it's really harder to do that, and true accountability. But these things are more natural in the setting that we have, and we're real thankful for that. For years, I did cell church. I used cells, and we'd meet on Sunday morning. We had cells. I would think that's a way step forward if you don't do anything, and we would have 90% of our people involved. Mm-hmm. So in various places, that's highly unusual. Usually about 40% if you try to do it. But somehow the Lord just blessed in that. But we found that the leaders of those groups did not necessarily take the burden off the pastors. They were still jumping past them to us. What we've developed with a house church model is they have true responsibility. Their people go to their pastors. That's the way things are handled, and it's much more of a shared ministry. So there's several things, that are so great about meeting in a home that are hard. They're hard to reach. I know, because I have decades of experience in being other types of church, and many blessings can come in any type of church thing. It's obviously God's proven that. He's done that many times. But You know, just to think about having 100% active attendance, just think about that. It's just so natural for us. But most churches have, you know, from 20, 25% or 40% would be really unusual if they could have 40% active attendance. Mm-hmm. It's so many things are better. There's just not a lot not to like about meeting in homes. Plus, we save the millions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We've been talking to Jim Eliff, who is the founder of Christian Communicators Worldwide. Their website, we've posted the information there on the notes. Go check that out. A lot of material and resources that many of you pastors and church leaders would be interested in. You'll find some things that, and it's free. You can download it for free. If you want the hard copies, you just have to pay for shipping. But that's available to you. And can people get in touch with you if they have more questions about this?
They certainly can. Just I think there's a website there. An email there, info@ccw. That's forwarded to me if it relates to me. Also, I will say the website for the church, if you're interested in looking at the church situation, is Christ Fellowship KC for Kansas City. ChristFellowshipKC.org. So that might be of interest to some people to
excellent
see how a house church works.
Jim, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. And it's for those of you who have tuned in right halfway through, Mark is not with us today because he's had other responsibilities. And we had Jim here, and we wanted to make sure that we took advantage of his time and talk to a little bit more about house church. And we're actually going to do one more podcast with Jim right away, and we invite you to tune in for that. We're going to talk about pastoral visits, how to make pastoral visits, and why, and how that will make such a difference in your ministry. So that's coming up, and I hope you'll join us again on the next special edition of Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.